Good afternoon. On behalf of the Tacoma Historical Society, this is Joe Boma. I am here with hopefully one of many Grit City stories with Mr. John Bufflin Haley. Mr. Haley, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well.
It is great to have you here. I'm looking forward to hearing, honestly, everything you can tell us about this town, because by the sounds of it, you've been involved with, your family has been involved with it as well since the early development of Tacoma back to the late 1800s.
Yep. Yeah, they sure have.
So, one of the things that really stuck out right off the bat to me was Hotel Tacoma, that glorious old building that unfortunately can't look at as well today.
No.
So, do you have any stories of the hotel's beginning?
Well, it's kind of amazing. I didn't know that much about the hotel, the history of it, till I came here just last week. I always knew that my grandfather, John Bufflin, had something to do with it, but I never knew what it was. And I had heard about the Tacoma Hotel, that it was a grand hotel and something quite interesting to look at, and that it had burned down. And then I came to the Historical Society here, and the manager showed me that my grandfather was the president of the Tacoma Hotel. And so that I had never told any of my relatives, my wife or kids about that, because I didn't know how much of that was true. There were so many amazing things that my grandfather did. And it was just one more that I could add to that basket, but I didn't know if it was true. So I was real happy to hear about that. What I knew about the hotel was it had fantastic views because it sat on, I think they call it Fireman's Park now.
Ah, yes, yes. I'm honestly new to town, but that is one of the more beautiful landmarks that I know about, yeah.
It had basically an unobstructive view of Commencement Bay, and it was very large. I knew that. And, of course, now they have pictures here of it, and it did. It looked just like Stadium High School. The basic design of it. And, of course, my grandfather was heavily involved in the lumber industry in Tacoma. Like at Bellarmine, I understood that he donated the doors. He made the doors for Bellarmine. So I imagine he had a lot to do with some of the structure of the hotel. And it's kind of sad to think that it burned down because of all the wood.
I say it's tragic. Look at it. It's a grand old brick building like the high school, you said.
Yeah.
And even more ironic because it is, you know, a lumber town. But
yeah.
I guess that happens.
Yeah, that's real unfortunate. And then there's the story about the totem pole. And I guess they verified information about that. But, yeah, they had to take it down. And that'll be missed by the old-timers, but the view is still there, so that's good.
And
I wish I knew more about that hotel, the inside of it.
Yeah, say, do you have any stories that your grandfather told you about the hotel? You mentioned he was full of tales and invent.
Well, my grandfather died a couple years before I was born. My mother named me after him, and so I never got the honor of meeting my grandfather. My cousin Jim Layton the other day, and I was talking to him, and he was telling me that grandfather was suffering from Alzheimer's in the last years of his life. So it was a bit hectic around the family at that time, from what I understand. As far as the Bufflin Mansion, we came from an Irish Catholic family, and what a great place to live in the north end of town around St. Patrick's Parish.
Yes.
And there were so many people from Ireland. And so we were heavily involved in the church and church activities. Well, my mother married a man, John Haley, who was not part of the Haley Candy Company, but the Tacoma family also. Unfortunately, his life didn't go so well. He was in the Secret Service. He was guard for President Truman, so that was good, but things went downhill fast, and they got divorced. And so this was when I was about three and a half years old, and so mother moved. We moved into the big house on Yakima Street. And I even remember the day that we moved in there.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, I mean, that house was absolutely gorgeous. There's a tower, as you see, And that's the first thing I did. At that young an age, I had to go up to the tower. And as soon as I could break away from everybody, because they were all doing other things in the house, I went up into the attic and I figured out how to get into the tower. And nobody knew where I was. And finally, they came up and rescued me from the tower. Yeah, I really loved that house. It was wonderful. The Leightons had lived there out of the four children. I think three of them were born in the house.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, my Aunt Kathleen, her mother, moved in to help grandmother take care of grandfather. There was a maid. We had a maid. There was a maid's quarters at the house and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And,
So this house is absolutely massive. Sorry to cut in there. Just looking at the photos, three stories with that amazing glass tower that you discussed right off the bat.
Yeah.
Maid quarters in there. A little better than like a two-bedroom.
Maid quarters were right down here. I'm pointing at the picture of the house. You can see that looks like a porch, a lower porch, but it's actually a walkway, a patio.
Okay.
There was a little pond in here.
Oh, wow.
And, they with all the kids, they filled it with dirt. Yeah, we couldn't make a swimming pool out of it. But the maid's room was over here, and this side entrance to the house had an entrance going into the maid's room and then into where there was an ice box. So when I grew up, we had ice delivery, but this was one of the first houses in Tacoma that had central refrigeration.
Oh, wow.
So down in the basement, we had compressors down there, and they fed the refrigerator that was up in the kitchen.
Oh, wow. That's
And
that's
so
awesome.
On the other side of the kitchen was the, I guess they call it a maid's pantry.
Yep.
Where they took care of the linen and bed sheets and stuff, and they had dining room, tablecloths and stuff like that. So anyway, Aunt Kathleen and she married Uncle Clarence, who ended up being a judge in Tacoma, Clarence Leighton, and they lived there for quite some time. So we moved in, it would have been about 47, 48, and I enjoyed living there with the Leightons because they had four kids, and their youngest son was just the same age, a little bit younger than I was, Dick Leighton, who's now a monk.
Oh.
So we call him
wow.
Dick the Monk. But after living with me, that probably convinced him to go into that kind of lifestyle.
So is he a silent monk or?
Yeah. Well, Trappist monks.
Oh, great breweries.
Yeah. But, fantastic man. Oh, just a brilliant man. So he and I shared the bedroom above the porch, the lower porch.
Yep.
So this whole area up here was a porch also.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's gorgeous.
And my sister shared a bedroom with Cousin Kay. And so then there was Peggy that was there. And so we had a pretty good houseful. But then one of my aunts moved in who was also suffering from a divorce from Seattle. And she decided to move back in the house. So now we're talking my grandmother, my Aunt Margaret, my Aunt Kathleen, and her four kids. So that's seven. And then the three of us. So we had 10 people living in that house.
So a small Catholic family.
Yeah, small Catholic. Well, right next door, they built a new house. Over here now, there's the Larkin home. And it's a beautiful home, designed somewhat like the Bufflin Mansion was, or the Sheard Mansion. It has a tile roof, and it's still there.
Okay.
And they had 12 children.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was smaller than our house. And, of course, they were good members of the parish, St. Patrick's also. But anyway, so there was a lot of adventure for a little kid.
Yeah.
Well, finally, Aunt Kathleen and Uncle Clarence, they occupied the maid's bedroom then. From that point after, I spent a lot of time around that house. I could hide in that house, and nobody would ever find me.
I say between the maids'
quarters. I could skip school, and they didn't know. Right next to the maid's bedroom, there were buttons by the back stairway, the maid's stairway, that put buzzers in the different bedrooms.
Okay.
And so the maid could come over and press a button to get somebody to come down or what have you. And they would go up and press all the buttons. And now, of course, I couldn't hear anything, so I didn't hear them. But, downstairs, grandfather, Bufflin, his background was an architect.
Okay.
At one time, he had worked for Eiffel.
Okay.
On the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
And he was a very inquisitive man. And he worked for Eiffel building with building the Eiffel Tower. I don't know what he did, but he, you know, his basic was designing. He designed in Holland. He designed church spires.
Okay.
So that's where you see a lot of the spires and things. So the design of the he designed the stairway going down into the basement. He took part of the basement and made a ballroom down there.
Oh, wow.
And there was a little electric fireplace down there. We had a pool table down there, and it was big enough for a ballroom. I mean, you could have dances, parties. As kids, we tried to have parties there. Other kids in school always invited us, wanted to invite themselves over to any parties we had because we had so much room. So that was exciting. We also had a upstairs on the main floor, we had the library, and it was gorgeous. It had all these mahogany bookshelves, glass doors, nicely carpeted, you know, but wood floors, of course. And the odd thing was there was about 8 animal heads on the walls high up above the books.
Okay.
The previous owner and the builder of it was Sheard, who was a hunter, and he had stores with all these knickknacks. What do you call that? Odd things.
Oh, okay.
Curio
shops.
Yeah, yes. Curio shops. Yes. And he had them all around the country. So because of his dealings with the Native Americans and everything, he had a lot of Native Americans. A lot. Yeah. The animal heads were apparently things he had hunted. We had full chief's costumes.
Oh, wow.
I remember papoose carrying thing. We had tomahawks, smoke pipes. Must have been at least 30 to 50 Indian wicker baskets and stuff throughout the house.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
So the house was basically a museum when you moved in.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I had lots. Oh, we had a stuffed alligator, a stuffed bear. You know, you come into the main entry. This was supposed to be the main entry. You come in there. There was a little foyer. And there was a bear, small bear cubs there with his arms around like that. You were supposed to put your umbrellas in there, you know. And then you walked out from there into the greeting area, and you were greeted with an alligator. But it was only a little thing, maybe about 4 feet long.
Still.
Yeah. But, there were artifacts all around the house. And right across from the library was the blue room, what we called the blue room or the music room.
Okay.
And it had the pocket doors also, just like the library did. Mm-hmm. And there was an upright grand piano that was in there. And a story I had heard about that was at one time, Grandfather Bufflin sponsored a Polish conductor, a Polish pianist.
I say Tchaikovsky?
No.
Chopin?
Oh, gosh. In those days, there was a pianist, Paderewski, and he was known around the world. He was an entrepreneur, and Paderewski would travel around the countries and play things. He was well known for Moonlight Sonata. There's recordings of it.
Only one of the most famous piano pieces.
Yeah. Okay. And he was apparently the one that made it the most famous. He was a brilliant, brilliant man. I read his life story, and boy, what a life he had in Poland and with the Russians. Wow. But my grandfather sponsored him to play, have a performance in Tacoma. And Paderewski came to the house, and he played on that upright grand. And I have no idea whatever happened to that upright grand. But that was in the music room. And then my mother had been a pianist, and she had a grand piano that was at the bottom of the main stairway. I still have that piano. But and then there was also a piano in the ballroom. So we had three pianos in the house. Lots of music. We even had record players, big 78s.
Still have 78, don't worry. They're making a comeback.
Well, I've still got some of them. But anyway, the living room in there was gorgeous. It had mural paintings on the walls. The fireplace was huge.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the front of the fireplace was probably about 4 feet tall and about 5 feet wide.
Okay.
And then there were two gigantic chandeliers. They were iron. They were big iron balls. They were round, about 4 feet in diameter.
Oh, wow.
And they were hanging from chains from the ceilings, and then lights came out of them, electric lights. And I remember we had an earthquake back in the 50s, and those things rocked back and forth for hours.
Yeah.
But anyway, these two mural paintings in the living room, They were put right on the wall. Mm. And again, I think this was Scheer, of course, that did this, because the painting on the west wall was of burial of probably a Yakima, a Tlingit Indian chief. It was part of their tradition, apparently. Mm. When the chief died, they would put his body up on a pedestal that was about 6 or 8 feet tall,
yep.
And they'd wrap it in leaves and oak and stuff, and the wife mm-hmm. would die.
Oh, wow.
Starved to death at the bottom of the tower. So here it had that tower on it with the chief's body up there, and then was sitting at the bottom of one of the legs there, and then the horse, the chief's horse, also had to die. And
oh, wow.
Then you'd see, off in the distance, you'd see wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely Yakima, because there were not really any mountains around. There was more prairie-like. Mm. So that was kind of a gory thing. But on the wall above the fireplace was Pacific Northwest Western Indians, mm-hmm. Native Americans. It looked like it was maybe Point Defiance or someplace in that area, and they were having a celebration. And they, you know, there was fires, and they were dancing, and it was, you know, it was a nice picture.
Yeah.
So those were in there. Then you go to the dining room area. It was quite large. There were mural paintings in there of the Pilgrims.
Oh, wow.
And then there was another fireplace in there, and my grandfather brought over Delft tile from Holland
mm-hmm.
and had the part of the wall there around the fireplace tiled with that. And then there was a breakfast room off to the side. You know, about 6 people could eat in there. Then there was that maid's pantry. And then the huge kitchen, like I said, it had a refrigerator, but it wasn't like what we think. It was took up the half the wall with these big doors, with the wooden doors with the big handles on them. So that was the kitchen area. And then there was a stairway for the maid's bedroom for going upstairs. The stairway in the living room, Grandfather, like I said, built this ballroom, so he built extra stairs to go down there.
Okay.
And apparently it was quite an architectural feat, because trying to get it into an area down through the flooring and everything that wasn't supposed to be a stairway, and it had to make a complete circle, a 360. And so he designed that. I never thought anything about it. I just always used to use that for going down there. And then the stairway going up, it was a large stairway. It took off and in one direction. We had 3 sofas in the living room, 3 big sofas in the living room, and they were all made at the Bufflin Lumber or Bufflin Furniture.
Okay.
He not only had Bufflin Lumber, but he had Bufflin Furniture Company.
Oh, wow.
On one of the walls there, the stairway went up behind this divan, and then there was a landing. There was like 4 or 5 steps to go up, and then there was a landing, and then a huge grandfather clock was there. But above that grandfather clock was the biggest elk head I had ever seen. I've never seen an elk head that big anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Then you take the other stairway going parallel to the first stairways, and it was 14 steps, and then there was a landing. And up there was a picture, but it was an actual picture. It wasn't painted on the wall like down in the living room. And it was Daniel and the lions in the den.
Okay.
And Daniel was kneeling down, and this was a big picture. It was like, I would say 10 feet by 5 feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty good size. And Daniel was kneeling and praying, and there were about 4 lions around him looking like, here's lunch. And these rays of light coming down through the windows onto Daniel, apparently to save him or whatever. So there are a few little scary things in that house.
Yeah.
They went up to the top of the stairway, and there was a big den up there, and there was a fireplace up there also.
Okay.
And that's where this picture came from. I'm talking this area of the house.
Yep.
This picture was above the fireplace for that one.
Okay.
It was always there, and it was the last thing I grabbed out of the house. I was smart enough to see it there, and I grabbed it, and I hid it. Then we had all these bedrooms. There was grandfather's bedroom was here, and then there was a walk-in closet, and then a bathroom, and then my grandmother's bedroom.
Okay.
So they didn't sleep together. So they had this whole wing of the house all to themselves. They didn't have garages in those days.
Mm-hmm.
They had carriage houses.
Yep.
And we found saddles and stuff out there.
Wow.
Yeah, so they must have...
Authentic saddle.
Yeah,
carriage houses.
Somebody must have had horses in there at one time.
So, and looking at the photo of the house, is that your family car out front as well?
Is that what?
Your family vehicle car?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
sorry,
we still have
the...
This, the best I could tell, this would be about 1929 or so.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so that's an old vehicle.
Yeah.
If you look close at this picture,
yep,
you can see a tower down there.
Yep.
That's Lowell's school.
Okay.
It fell down in an earthquake. A Boy Scout was killed when that happened. But and I was out in the front yard when that earthquake hit, and I mm-hmm. heard that tower come down. And I also saw little cracks go up the side of our house, and they were repaired.
Oh, with such a large house, you mentioned hiding in the attic and all sorts of little tunnels. Were there any secret passageways in there, or did you just kind of...
Well, yeah, we wondered about that, because on this, the 5th and Yakima entrance down here, you see this is mm-hmm. all granite.
Yep.
And there were little windows. I think you can see them here. Now,
yep.
this is where the ballroom was, okay?
Okay.
But if you look closely on this one, you see a little square window. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a window, it was bars.
Okay.
Now, down in the ballroom, the ballroom took the entire width of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how big it was. Down in the ballroom, there was an electric fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Grandfather had built in there.
Okay.
On the other, it would have been on the right below the main entry. As kids, even the Larkins would come over and we'd look through there and we could see a table in there and we could see a chair and we could see some wine bottles. And we wondered how they got in there. You know, was there a secret entrance? Did Grandfather build something in that electric fireplace, which I don't think he did, of course, to get in there? Did we ever hear any ghosts? I never did. But talking to my cousin Jim, he was afraid in that house. He had spooky things with all those animals and some of those pictures. And he was relieved to leave the house. But not me. I loved it. We left after my grandmother died. And they tried to sell the house. In those days, people didn't want big houses. They wanted ranch houses, single-level, modern, you know, like they would show on television.
Yep.
So apparently several doctors tried to buy it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make nursing homes out of it. Well, we had Dr. Larkin over here.
Mm-hmm.
We had Dr. Crow across the street. We had another doctor down here. And they didn't want to have a nursing home anymore, clear them. So they kept fighting to have that done. And so they ended up just selling it for the land. Horrible.
That's unfortunate considering it. I mean, for those of you listening, you can find the photos of this house online. But it is 3 stories tall, has, again... red roof tile, looks like a watchtower, all sorts of archways and porticos. When you picture the most, I would argue, classic home you can, this is it.
Yeah, that's definitely Mediterranean. They say Spanish, but it is Spanish or Mediterranean because it had a lot of stucco work on it, very ornate.
Mm-hmm.
On the roof, I used to drive my grandmother crazy because as I got older, I would go up into the tower and then I'd go out on the roof and... this ornate stucco that was up here, they had covered with tin to protect it from the weather and everything.
Makes sense.
I'd go out on the roof and I'd bang on that, you know, like I was Gene Krupa. You don't know who Gene Krupa is, but he was a famous famous drummer. And grandmother would stand outside, yell at me and yell in Gaelic. And, she'd just, can you imagine what the drop was like on the other side?
Yeah.
Because, you know,
40 feet.
Yeah, the basement was there was, you drove down a hill to where the carriage to the garage was.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole part of the house was open on the other side.
Okay.
Not here.
Okay.
So it would have been nobody would have survived that. And then look at all the flowers and everything. It was well maintained.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another cute odd story about that. Is I joined the Navy. Oh, I ended up going to Marymount Military Academy, too. Have you ever heard of that?
I have heard of Marymount, yes.
I went there for a couple of years.
Okay.
Very good experience. I wish they had more of those things. And, of course, it's not there anymore. But not long after that, a couple of years after Marymount, I joined the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, boy, that was a lot of fun. How it relates to this story is, we were going around the Horn, South America, And we were in a storm deck.
Dangerous sails, Straits of Magellan. That's
yeah,
impressive.
Straits of Magellan. Oh, yeah. And I was 17 years old. But anyway, I was sitting at in the galley. It was an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in the galley. And at the table, I got talking with this fella, and he's from Tacoma.
Okay.
Well, my mother had been a teacher in Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
When we first moved back into the house, she went back to UPS or CPS and got her teaching degree. So she taught in Tacoma schools only for a couple years. Interesting story. And here I am, tip of South America, storm outside, and I'm talking to this guy. And I mentioned that my mother was a teacher in Tacoma. And he ended up telling me that she was his third grade teacher.
Small
his
world.
Third grade teacher.
Very and he small knew, world.
You know, he said she was one of his favorite teachers. I mean, you know, her name was Klesina, and you don't you hear that name very much. And you know, he knew who she was. And then I said, yeah, we lived on 5th and Yakima. And then he says, oh, yeah, my grandmother and grandfather tried to buy that house on Yakima. They were going to make it into a nursing home. So here I am, 1962 or so, and tip of South America, and one of the people that I run into, a family member of one of the people that tried to buy the house. So anyway, the last time I saw the house, we moved to Seattle when we left here, and we moved to a small house in Seattle. And but I would hitchhike, I would take the bus, I would take the train every once in a while and just go over and look at the house. I took a couple of my buddies on two separate occasions. I took them. Now, you got to remember, I'm only about 14 years old. And I took them to Tacoma from the north end of Seattle. And took them to Tacoma and took them through the house. I knew how to get into the house. They had caretakers watching the house. But luckily, I was never there when a caretaker was there. But I knew how to sneak into the house. And it was the palm trees.
Really?
You could climb the palm trees and get onto that porch. But anyway, so that was cool, going back like that. As a matter of fact, one of the kids, I ran into him as an adult years later. His name was Joe Henry. I didn't recognize him. He had been running by our house. We live in Federal Way now in a lake area. And he would be running by the house, and he'd wave to me. And why is this guy waving to me? And so I ran into him at church. And he started talking to me, and he says, you don't know who I am. And I said, no. He says, I'm Joe Henry. And then the name rang a bell. And he said, John, you took me on one of the greatest adventures in my life. Now, you have to remember, he came from a good Catholic family. And his father was a policeman. And he had like three brothers and sisters and stuff. And he said, you took me on the most fantastic journey. My mother, my family never knew about that excursion we took. And as I recall, we took a bus. I got him on a bus, and we took a Greyhound bus to Tacoma, got off at the old station on Pacific Avenue, walked up to the house, and I took him on a tour and everything and came back. We didn't have any money for another bus to get back. No problem.
Yep.
There's a Union Station down in Tacoma.
Okay. Yep. Yes,
okay?
There is.
We can hop on a train. So we did. We went down there and hopped on a train and got caught. So the train guy stopped us and, you know, oh, here's two kids, 14 years old.
Yeah.
And what are you doing? And I told him. And, of course, Joe Henry had mentioned that his father was a policeman. And I remember the guard said, boy, if your dad finds out what you did. So he was nice and he bought us tickets. Or I don't know if he bought tickets. He got us on the next train headed to Seattle. And we went there. So Joe had never told anybody in his family about this. So about a month later, his mother was at church. And after Mass, we were all sitting at the same table. And Joe told his mother what he did. She couldn't believe it. You did that, you know.
Did he do it at church for safety? Just, you know, thinking he'd be protected from his mother?
Oh, maybe that was it. Yeah. So anyway, then the very last time I went to the house, the only thing that was left was a foundation. And at that point, I cried.
Say, any remnants of the ballroom or anything else?
Nothing.
That is
luckily for me,
tragic.
I got this picture.
Yes.
My mother got the piano, and she saved that, made sure I could take care of that.
Yeah.
And that's it. all the wonderful memories of the neighborhood. I think I was a roof guy because I climbed all the roof. I climbed the Larkin's roof. I climbed the Crow's roof. I climbed these people's roof. I did a lot for being such a young kid, and I didn't have much supervision.
Well, sounds like you made the most of it and had fun in such a grand old home. I'm losing adjectives to describe how beautiful this house is.
Well, I hope people get a chance to see it. And then going back to the Historical Society,
yep.
When I was here a week ago, the manager here came up and showed me that my grandfather, before he bought this house, had a house that was just a block away. Mm-hmm. And after I leave here today, I'm going to go up and take a look because I think it's still there. And look at that. That's a big house.
Yeah, so it's...
But I'm going to go up and see if it's still there. I sure hope so.
I hope so, too. I got to say, your grandfather had a thing for towers on fine homes.
Well, let's see. I mentioned about the Eiffel. Oh, yeah. Yep. Another side story here. We were into motorhoming. Mm-hmm. So we were motorhoming all around the country, and there's a little town outside of Yuma that's on the California border.
Okay.
And a very wealthy man bought several hundred acres down there, and he's part of the Rothschilds or something to do with the French ultra-wealthy people.
Yeah, yes.
And it escapes me my mind right now, the name of the town. It was named after his wife, Felicity.
Okay.
Felicity. Yeah, that's the name of the town.
Okay.
And I met the man, and he was fantastic, a wonderful man. Like I said, they were heavily involved in France in the finance and stuff. So this guy is very wealthy. The little city that he bought, there's an area that he calls the center of the world. People think he's a little attached. I don't think he's a little attached at all. He even built here we are in the desert area, and he had a mound built, a huge mountain built, kind of, and a big church up on top of it.
Okay.
And people think he's a religious fanatic. No, he does this to honor the veterans. He started parachuting, skydiving and stuff like this.
Oh, wow.
And, I better cut off all the story about that and get to the point. When they were in Paris, they went to an auction, and he bought steps from the Eiffel Tower. They were replacing the steps in the tower.
Yep.
And I said, well, you know, my grandfather worked on the Eiffel Tower. And he says, well, I've got steps from the Eiffel Tower right over here. And he pointed out, and in this conglomerate of buildings that he has, sure enough, there's a winding stairway, and it's about 20, 30 feet high, okay? And
not what you expect in Felicity, Arizona.
No, not at all. And he took me up to his office, and he had this messy, messy office. And there was a picture, a big picture of him standing there with Charles de Gaulle. And so, you know, this guy comes from.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. And he says, I want to get a picture of you standing on the stairs. Oh, I said, my wife and I were in Paris several years ago, and they were on strike. And I wanted to go up to the Eiffel Tower because my grandfather worked on it so much, and I couldn't do it. And he says, I'll take you up the stairways. I've got the stairways over here, you know. So he was very insistent that I go out, and he opened up. Everything was locked up, and he brought me inside and had me stand on the stairs, took pictures of it. And so I've got the pictures of that. What a nice man.
Yeah.
So, towers. Now, this is something I haven't looked into here, but I've heard stories. There's a church. Okay, there's a Tacoma Dome. You see that?
Yes.
And then you go further south and you see the spires on the big church?
Yes.
Apparently, grandfather designed those.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
So that built into his, you know, Holland. What he had done there.
Exactly.
And apparently he provided a lot of the wood and some of the rock, the bricks.
Okay.
And so he had a lot to do with building that. So that, again, is more influence that Bufflin had.
Yeah.
He had the American Pipe Company that built wood pipes. They're still using some of them down on the tide flats. They're still underground.
That is.
And they're still.
Impressive construction, built to last.
Yeah. He never stopped. Oh, and we haven't even gotten into what he did with the airplanes and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So before we get into that story, we'll pause.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit talked about. I'm going to have to leave pretty soon. So
okay, this was a story about basically the Hotel Tacoma and the William Sherrod Mansion, more likely known to you as the Bufflin Mansion. And I'm here with Mr. John Bufflin Haley on behalf of the Tacoma Historical Society. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for inviting me.